Testing 1, 2, 2, 2. This is Reverb. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Reverb. Your eyes are getting heavy. You will give me all your money.
Okay.
If anybody is curious at all about the drink Absinthe, we just got some in stock, and it's illegal in most countries in the world. It's expensive. It's $12 a shot,
but it's worth it because it'll get you
real funny real quick. So if you want to try it out, you're one of the first people in this bar to have it. See Nikki the bartender, and she'll make you some flaming Absinthe.
Thank you. You can hear me okay? What sort of level should we have for this?
That sounds pretty good.
Can people hear that?
Is that good?
Okay. So. Well. Thank you for coming, everybody. My name is Mike Stevenson, and I've been involved in the Art Interface Device project from the beginning. And I'm going to start things off here. We're going to show this thing that we've created. It's a collaborative project worked on by, at last count, we had 33 people who were credibly involved in it. And then there were a lot of other people who touched it or did something, gave gifts, brought pizza, or I don't know, all different kinds of things. So there's been all kinds of other people besides who've helped out. Right now there's the standing developer group who I'm just going to point out. So this is Erin Clark. And she's done, I would say, the speciality has been making circuit boards and doing the web server, which we just got online recently. And then we have Rob Cruikshank here. And he's our master of circuits and figuring out what resistor to use and stuff like that. And we have Mel Wilson. Mel is a Python guru who we've made lots of use of and exploited to the hilt. Stefan, no, don't tell me. Viahua. Stefan Viahua, who is everything in programming and a lot in electronics as well. He's brought a lot of stuff. He's been with the project for a long time and contributed a whole lot. Ian Garmaze, also from a Python orientation, has been involved with the project for quite a long time and brought many great people to the project. He's been our socializer. And over here we have Ben Bogart, who's been crucial to the project and did the step and repeat thing, which he's going to show you. That's that installation over there, and he's going to talk about that. And then we have John here, who's he's been really good with the electronics, really good with the programming and the documentation. He's played a major role in the documentation. That's where we're really seeing good stuff. So now there must be other people. Where are they? They're hiding. Me? Yeah, I've been involved since, I kind of got started early 4 years ago. The project's been kind of public for 2 years, so I kind of spent 2 years asking everybody if they thought it was a good idea or not. And then I asked people to get involved in 2002. So it's been going in development for about 2 years, the Art Interface Device. Rob was there then too. I should not forget that Rob was there in 2000 when we started talking about this. So he's come all the way. So that's kind of an introduction thing, and then we're gonna talk about the website, because did I forget anybody? Who did I forget? Anybody of the currently active group? If there's people out there that want to come forward and be recognized who were involved earlier, Tim Moody, that's right. He's not here tonight, but he's been really helpful in setting up the Drupal site and doing electronics and programming, a lot of the firmware programming. So, okay. So what is the ART interface device, people are asking? Okay. That is the ART interface device. And more conceptually, what it is that, Rob and I think we're the only ones left from that SenseBus project that are standing up here. The SenseBus project was an earlier project that had 9 microprocessors like these, but only we used the basic stamp, which some of you probably have heard of. It's a sort of microprocessor that's used a lot by electronics hobbyists and artists. And we used 9 of them in this installation that created an interactive environment. And there were things you could move around, and there were sounds that responded, and light that responded. And it worked okay, but there were some things we weren't really totally happy about. And one of them was that we couldn't change the internal things in the basic stamp to make them do exactly what we wanted. And it was lacking a few features like A to D, which we really decided we wanted. So we looked around for some kind of alternative, and we found some, but they were very proprietary, which means that you couldn't change them either in the ways that you might want to. So we were looking at all this kind of open source and general public license software, stuff that's been made by groups of people and then copyrighted, but only copyrighted to protect the intellectual property, and then given away. So you take the copyright and then you give it away. So we thought that was kind of cool, and we'd like to do that. So what we did was we decided to make a hardware and software package that could be used by artists and that would be open source and free and released under the general public license. So that's what the ART interface device is. And we wanted to be able to change anything about it, pretty much. So we wrote some firmware, which is something that you put onto these chips called PIC16F877s, which you can order from an online shop, and you can also get off Queen Street right now. And they're sort of like, well, they're microprocessors or microcontrollers, and we've written some what's called firmware, because it's you can't just erase it by, I don't want to go into that, forget it. There's firmware, and we wrote it, and it works. That's what you want to know. And it allows us to control a bunch of different things. And so right now, we are watching some motors go around. Rob Cruikshank is going to tell you what's actually happening there and how that's working. But before we do that, we're going to have a look at the AID website. Now, the AID website is a critical piece of the whole package, because that's where you find out how to make one of these things and how to use it. And it's also where you get support when it doesn't work after you built it. And you get some help with why doesn't it work. And as people sort of find things that don't work, if more than a couple of people find it doesn't work, then we go, oh, we must be explaining something wrongly. And so then we'll rewrite what we've told you to do or told people to do. And so this will be an evolutionary process where the more people that build boards, the better the documentation will get and the better we'll get at troubleshooting things that go wrong. But I can tell you that 5 different people have built the current AID board, and it was successful pretty much out of the gate. But there is one thing that we've noticed that people do wrong. There's one resistor that hides near the microprocessor that people leave off often. So we're going to make a big signpost on the website that tells people to watch out for that. And we'll have some of those gotchas. So we're still working on things like that. So I'm going to hand over the mic to Aaron now, who is going to navigate the AID website. The AID website is based on a content management system, which means, I don't know if I want to explain that, but basically it's a it's a shell that you can stick stuff into, and that's what we've done here. But it's open source as well, and it's a very nice thing. And if you want to make a website that's easy to maintain and uses what's called dynamic content, that means it's updated all the time, and you want users to be able to update it as well as yourself, then that's the way to go, we think, so far. We might change our mind, though.
Thank you, Mike.
Whoa.
Whoa. Ooh, ooh. It's loud. Okay. I'm Aaron, just in case you forgot, and I take care mostly of the back end of the web server, as well as building boards. And like Mike was saying, one of the most critical aspects of this website is for anyone who's trying to build the board to sort of have access to the developers and the process, all the documentation, the schematics, and also a place to write their own experiences of the process. And the thing that I like the most about the AID project is that it's designed, it's supposed to be for artists. It's supposed to be an easy kind of inroad for artists to use electronics, and not to sort of, not by hiding all of the bits and pieces in code, but by putting it together in a way that is designed and useful for artists. So, I think we're not quite there yet. I'm one of the first sort of artist experimenters trying to build the board from scratch. And what I did, coming to the website here at aid.interaccess.org/, well, just go to aid.interaccess.org and you'll get to the Drupal part. Can everybody see this back here? I know there's kind of some equipment there not in the way. Google, yeah. Google is your friend. Anyway, so the first thing you do is you come to the Drupal site and create a new account. We won't go over this whole process. I'll just throw in my account here. Whoops, yep, there it is. Oh, it needs typing with one hand. So that means that if somebody is running a sniffer on the network here, they're going to read my password. That sounds like logging in now. And look, Aid has a t-shirt, if you want a t-shirt. Look at advertising for you while you wait for your login here. Oh, I must have clumsy fingered my password or something. It will log in eventually. I did set this web server up. Network lag. It's not there. It's here. All right. Anyway, moving right along. Why isn't that? I don't know. Okay, let's cancel that. Stop. I'm not sure what that's all about. So before you create account, you want to know a little bit about the AID, the art interface device. A good place to start here is the Getting Started Guide. You know, I think we're having some technical difficulties here. Yes, it helps to have the Ethernet cable plugged in. All right. I'll try that logging in thing again. All right, so there I am, Aaron, create content. My blog, that's the first thing I did, was I started making notes about my experience. It starts from the bottom here. Wrote a little bit about myself and trying to buy the parts, and this all ends up being useful for documentation later on. And yeah. So the useful thing about having a blog is you're giving feedback about your own experience, and it helps the developers and John here doing documentation to take this information and make better documentation, make it easier for everybody who's new to AID to get used to it. And anyway, I think that's somebody else's cue here.
Okay, so now John's just going to take you through this getting started guide.
Hi there, I'm John. So the idea of the getting started guide is for people that actually want to build one of these things, which is probably a lot of people. So anyhow, takes it from two angles. Either there's people out there that know a lot about electronics and they want to get to the gory stuff, and so that's where you can just jump right in and look at the schematics and the PC board designs, and that's all you need to know. And it's got the component list as well. But I'll just hop over here to the getting started guide. The first page you find, it gives you an outline of the three different levels of aid. What I'm going to focus on right now is user level 1, and what that is for people that they're just getting started off. They know a little bit about electronics, but they're not really too gory in there. So it explains about the three levels, and so we'll take it in here. And it in the bottom here, you see it gives you the different options. You got level 1, you can go for the do-it-yourself style. That's if you actually want to go out and buy all the parts, build the PC board, and program the pick yourself, you have that option. Or if you're not really too confident and you want to just take it easy and let somebody hold your hand while you do it, you have that option too, where you can go for the pre-built option. That's where you take advantage of some of the services that are available on the website. So I'll just go to this next page here. So it starts us off and says, what skills do I need? Well, first you need to know how to build a circuit board. You need to know how to solder. Or if you don't want to build a circuit board, you can do a wire wrapping. The next it explains what kind of materials you need. And that's where the equipment list is handy, because if you're going to go out and buy parts, you need to know what to buy, right? So we've got some of the basic rundown on the tools that you're going to need to build this thing. And that's what the equipment list is here. And the next part, you want to get a rough idea how much time you're looking at, because it's going to take you about a couple hours here, a couple days worth of work potentially, to build it from scratch if that's what you're going to do. So now the other thing I'd like to point out here, and Erin was getting into that with her blog, every person that comes in here, if we try to encourage the people to start a blog and to keep track of their progress as they go. This does two things. It builds a community, and you can see where other people are as they're going along. A blog is a weblog. Basically, it's like a little logbook, so you can keep notes about how you're doing, include links, and just lets people see what you're doing. Now the other thing that it lets us do too is, as you're going along, you're bound to hit some spots in the documentation where things aren't completely bump free, and that's where it gives you a chance to point out to us where there's some insufficiencies in the documentation, and we'll see that and we can fix that up, and hopefully the next person that tries to build one of these after yourself might not have those problems. So now the other thing you see here is the link to the aid builders list, and I'll just pop over here for a second. Now what this is, it's a discussion list, and the idea here is that, like I mentioned earlier, for people that are building these things, and it gives you, the idea is for the community to support itself. So you're going to have people all the way from ourselves that are fairly experienced with building these things, and you have questions, you can ask us directly. And there's going to be other people out there that may want to offer their services. They'll say, okay, I'm willing to help out and build PC boards, and if people want to buy them off me for a nominal cost, then I'll offer that as a service to the community to help build things and get things going. So that's what the aid builders list is for anyhow. And that's basically a way for people to hold your hand if you're not really too sure of what you're doing at this stage. Take you to the next stage here. Sure. Okay, so the next page here, we're getting into the do-it-yourself part, and you see this is where the really important stuff is. We'll have a look at the PC board here. So if you want to build one, we've got it We've got the circuit board put up here as a PDF file. Is it taking a while? May take a second here. And what you do with this, though, is it's set up so you can print it off on a 1-to-1 ratio on a piece of acetate and build your own board. So here you can see this is what the circuit board for the aid looks like. The other thing you'll want is, like I mentioned earlier, you want to know what the parts are. So we've got, that's on another page. We've got the schematic here as well. This also has a list of what the parts are. And you can see here, that's the aid as well. There's the microcontroller there. There's the power supply and with the serial interface here. And the other thing that you'll want to is if you're actually going to be building and populating, you want to know where the parts go on the circuit board, and that's what the parts placement is here. And this shows you by component where everything goes. And there's that little hidden resistor that Mike was talking about earlier. Now the next thing here is I'll go down to the what do we have here? These two documents here, there's the assembly document and the test document. The assembly document is basically, this walks you through step by step the process of populating the board, but not only that, it also includes, in the test document, it explains basically, rather than just saying, okay, I've got a whole handful of components here, I just want to stick them everywhere, it walks you through in a logical progression. So the first step is you build the power supply. It's got the list of all the components here. And after you build the power supply, I'll pop over to the test document here. So it explains, you build the power supply, and then you plug it in and test it out. Make sure you don't let the smoke out of the components. And if everything goes well, you've got the little LED lights up and the power supply is good. So that's great. You know that something works on there. If for some reason you haven't done something wrong, right, you've got the troubleshooting section here, and it explains, well, what might have gone wrong. And it walks you through each of the steps. Well, okay, maybe you've got a component that's put in wrong. And explains everything that, within reason, what may have happened. So assuming you get past that step, it takes you through each of the other subsections of the circuit. For the serial interface, for testing that. The next step, the serial input selection. And then the real guts of it is the microcontroller. By this stage in the game, everything should be fairly copacetic. And when you get to this spot, and we tested this out the other day when I built one on Sunday, and by this point, everything went flawless. So this document you may not even need half the time. We're doing good? Okay, so I guess that basically gives you a rough good overview of the getting started guide, and I'll pass it back over to Mike.
Thanks a lot, John. Now we're going to see something move, and I'm going to hand over the mic to Crookshank, and he's going to explain what's going on here.
Okay, well, you're already seeing something move. Hopefully we'll see it stop and start moving again. I don't have a website because I don't like computers. I like things, and I think the best definition of art I ever heard was, I think you should do things with other things. And that is what aid is all about. We have some other things here, and they're motors. And I've got a picture of an owl, a picture of a cat, a picture of an octopus, and a picture of a fish, and they are rotating. But they are not only rotating, but they are rotating under software control. Thanks to Mel, who has written a program in about 5 minutes to control the action of those motors. So you're probably wondering, okay, how does the aid talk to the motors? I kind of got started doing electronics with artists, teaching a series of workshops that I called Flintstones Electronics, teaching people to use very primitive chips. You know, you've all seen these chips, and you know, they're these little black things with a lot of legs, and they're, you know, literally black boxes. A lot of what they do is very simple, and, you know, I'm pretty confident I could teach anybody in this room to make something that has some basic input and output capability using some of these chips. And most of the ones I like, you know, date back from, you know, the dawn of the space age, like the 1960s. You know, the chips that went up to the moon are still really good. And what's better is they're really cheap. They're like, you know, 75 cents, 50 cents. So you can make up some quick little interfaces. I don't know if you could really see this here, but I just built a little motor driver card with a couple, like, off-the-shelf motor driver chips, two little chips. It cost $10 to build that. It's, you know, dirt cheap. This is an audio switcher, which we'll try to demo. This cost about $8-$9 to make. Okay, so that was part of the philosophy of AID, was to get the stuff like really entry level, like anybody can afford to do this. And we wanted an interface that was really, really simple. So we settled on what's called an 8-bit interface. Everybody, you hear about bits. Bits are just short for binary digit. That means a 1 or a 0. So we've basically made, on one of these little pieces of wire, you can send 8 little ones or 8 little zeros or any combination. So if Mel, can you send a different combination of ones and zeros to the motor driver? And we reverse some of the motors, and we can start and stop them just by sending a combination of a 1 and a 0, which is like 5 volts or a lack of 5 volts. We can make those little things do anything we want, as long as it involves turning around. And the nice thing about, well, if you want to do more than that, then you need more motors and you need a machine shop, and then you can build like an 800-foot robot, and it can, like, you know, just make it so that it's narrow enough to walk down Queen Street, and don't forget about the streetcar lines. But you can take over the world. You just need bigger motors. The nice thing about this stuff too is it's modular. We have do you feel confident that with the audio switcher thing? Do you want to? Is that ready to go? Or okay, but you could send like a series of bits. Do you want to just see what's going to happen? I built an audio switcher based on this, and we haven't tried it yet because we were just kind of banging out software. But I'm willing to give it a try, just because I want to see if it works. If Lewis is in the house, he might want to bring up our audio. But give us just 5 seconds, and maybe Mike can say a few words while we're patching wires.
Yes, I can. So this has all been pretty technical, but there's another side to this project, which is, I guess we were getting into a little bit with the open source thing. This has been a collaborative project, and it's been what we've kind of come to understand as a free and open collaboration, which means that people can come and they can go into the collaboration. So it's kind of an open door, and people have been doing so. They've been coming along. Sometimes they just sort of have a peek and see what's going on. Other times they come and solder a few parts and then disappear. Some people come and stay for a long time. And we've been meeting every Sunday for 2 years and some days in between. And it's been a really great experience for me, and I'm sure for other people too, to see that you can actually accomplish something on this basis. And we don't have any structure, really. We just get together every Sunday and try and make something that works. We started with a pretty solid concept at the beginning, and we've stayed true to that, made lots of changes when they were necessary, but it's kind of all come together, even though it's never going to be finished. But the more people that are involved, the more we get done. So if people are interested in putting a hot piece of steel against some lead, they should come along to the Art Interface Device meeting, which is probably going to have a little break right now, but watch the website, because we will be getting back onto things. So far, we've been meeting every Sunday afternoon at 1:30 at InterAccess, which is 401 Richmond Street. You can get all the details off of this website under Contacts. I think you will find that stuff. And How close are you, Rob? Okay. Yeah, this is kind of what it's like on a Sunday at InterAccess, except there's nobody with a microphone. We don't bother with a microphone. The different boards. Okay, let's get into that. So as we showed you before, you have this thing. This is the AID main board. We dubbed it. Now, the AID main board has this 40-pin connector in the middle of it. That's that rectangle. It's got a lot of pins. Later on, you'll come up and you'll see it close. You can't see anything from where you are, I know. Okay, so that 40-pin connector is like an IDE connector, which is a very standard kind of connector inside a computer to connect your hard drives. So we like standardized things that are easy to get. And this here is an AID peripheral card, and there's two kinds of peripheral card. This one is a output card, and that means that you plug that in. There's a 40-pin connector on here. You connect it into the 40-pin connector on the main board, and then you can talk to things that are outputs. So they could be motors, as we have here. They could be solenoids, which are things that work with magnetism and move things. Could be the right wire on the right connector. Have we got the right wire on the right connector?
Yeah.
Excellent. So,
Mel is switching this audio when there's...
Sorry. Yeah. Mel is actually just typing numbers in, and he's switching between a whole nest of MP3 players and CDs and stuff. Yeah, some of them are quite quiet. Try higher number. Go up to 4 or 5. I have 5 items. Yeah. Okay. So maybe we just... There's no audio control on here, so. Just try changing numbers between 0 and 5. There we go. That's more like it, everybody. Grab your partner. So yeah, we have the square dance or contra dance interface, and I happen to know there are at least 2 electronic artists in this room who know how to contra dance, and but we won't make them show you. So yeah, that's you know, $10 worth of electronics, and you can switch a whole nest of audio between like glitch techno and square dance music, and you know, really that's kind of what it's all about, isn't it?
Thanks very much, Rob. Glad you got your wire in the right place there. Okay, over to Stefan. Stefan, I think it's time. Is it time, or should we do Ben's thing? Or should we do your thing? Well, you and Ben can do your thing, and then we'll go on to... Yeah, let's have Stefan. So, how do you want to do this? Do we need to switch the cable over, right? So you take this. I'll switch the cable.
Okay, so we'll show it. That, those are both outputs. We're switching audio, which is we're using the art interface device to control something in the real world from a signal on a computer. And now we're going to do the reverse. Inputs from the real world, we're going to use the real world to control something on a computer through a box, a knobby box. So this is a pretty simple thing. It's a big black box, but I can tell you inside it there isn't much. It's 8 potentiometers, which are variable resistances. And we're going to use this as a sort of 8 degree of freedom 8D mouse to control some fantastic graphics that Ben whipped up last night. Is that online? So you can see on the left-hand side is the fantastic graphic we're about to control. Is it running? Oh, okay. I have to restart.
Okay.
Okay. We'll go on to the next thing because I
talk about the firmware.
Okay. So on the main board, there's the 40-pin header, and there's this big black chip, which Mike mentioned earlier, is a PIC 16F877. It costs about $10 in quantity 10 or 12, and a little bit more if you only buy one at a time. It's a mini computer in a chip, if you'll accept that. And we've written some software in C, which is burnt into there and gives you a simple language, a bit like DOS or a Unix prompt, but very, very much simpler, that you can use to interact with this thing over a serial port. So most PCs will have what's called an RS-232 serial port on the back. You can plug that in there, open up a terminal, Minicom or Zterm or something, and start typing away to access all of the features of the ART interface device. That language, that command language that we've made, is also very regular, which means that you can, without too much effort, write software that runs on a PC or a Mac laptop or what have you, that will send these commands as if a human were typing, and get the response and do something useful with them, which is what we're trying here. So
what kind of software could they use to on the
main? Right, so to interact over the serial port, as I guess I mentioned, you could use a terminal and type all the commands yourself, or anything that can communicate with that serial port and send and receive text. So we've done demonstrations in TCLTK, in Python, in Pure Data, which Ben is working on right now. It's a graphical programming language. Some of you might have heard of Max, which is similar to Pure Data, but commercial and proprietary, but you can do the same things with it. And Director, Macromedia Director, Mike has written some code and interacts with that. So that's how you get a signal from the real world into your computer to do something cool with it.
Hello, everyone. I don't know why I'm holding this, but Stefan handed it to me. So this is actually Stefan trying to fix whatever was going wrong, and hopefully after that I'll be able to show something that we whipped up today. But primarily I'm here because of the installation in the back. Hopefully most of you have had an opportunity to play with the weird guy in the corner, and maybe caused him to get a little bit too close for your own personal space, but yeah, someone's having fun back there. Anyway, basically, the name of this piece is Step and Repeat, and it's a installation that was created in collaboration with the AID group, and it was produced or presented at a place called the SAT, Society of Art and Technology in Montreal, back in March. So Step and Repeat uses a AID board to do an AID board as an input device, and there's something called a Polaroid rangefinder, which is used actually inside of Polaroid cameras to do autofocus. So all a Polaroid rangefinder does is have an idea of exactly how far away something is, and it does that using a sonar echo. I don't know if anyone's noticed the clicking sound that you can hear coming out of the sensor, but that's the sonar echo. So it sends out a sound, it bounces off of you, and it times how long it takes for the sound to hit you and come back. Based on that, it knows exactly how far away you are. So what this software does is use this range finding data, how far you are, to make an interpretation that it uses to change its behavior. So its interpretation says, well, do they take a step forwards or backwards? And then they respond based on that stimulation, you could say. It doesn't always respond the same way, and it doesn't always interpret whether you've taken a step forward or backward quite the same way. If you take a step forward and then sort of move a bit back, it's really not sure what exactly you did. So it will maybe make a step forward or make a step back. And for me, this is part of what interactive art becomes more interesting, when it actually surprises you and it's not just about, oh, look, it makes a perfect step every time I do. Not quite Simon Says, but something in between. So that's Step and Repeat, and hopefully everyone will, who hasn't had a chance to play with it yet, will play with it before we have to take it down. So I encourage everyone to go over and walk around. Oh, and to notice that, to mention that Step and Repeat was produced using Pure Data, the exact same software that this demo is not quite working, and it's a GPL open source program that runs on practically every OS. So. And the installation is powered by Linux. You don't see those every day. So, there you go. So I guess I'm just killing time now while everyone tries to figure out what the hell we're gonna do next. Oh, I see numbers. Heaven forbid. All right, Stefan, do you want?
Are you ready, Stefan? If not, I'll get Ian to just say what, you're ready.
Hopefully everyone can see this going on in the background. So what we're using is the gem library for Pure Data, which allows you to do OpenGL stuff. So there are 8 controllers, 8 pots on this little thing, and 6 of those control respectively the rotation of this object on the X, Y, and Z axes, as well as how large the scale of the object on X, Y, and Z axes. So you can squeeze it and pull it out and so on. So what's actually happening here is we have just a straight cube, and there's an invisible object that's copying the cube, and there's a feedback loop happening. So the cube gets copied over and over again, back through time. And one of the really fancy knobs on the back, the one on the right, changes the size of this feedback process. Oh, wrong one. Apparently it's the one on the left. So there you go. You can see changing the size of the feedback changes the way this thing works, and you can keep rotating it and get some fancy VJ stuff happening. Hopefully other people will come up and actually play with it. That would be kind of fun. Any aspiring VJs in here? Come on. Someone's got some bravery. All right, anyway. So there's one more. Oh, there you go. Explore. Just play with it. Enjoy yourself. Oh, he doesn't need to know how it works. Just play with it and see what happens. Come on.
What's it doing effectively?
So how does it feel?
Feels like good, but then also bad.
What makes it bad? How could this possibly be a poor experience?
Like bad meaning good.
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood that. But now it seems like you're enjoying yourself. And it's all using...
Why isn't it full screen?
Oh, you want to have an obscure question now. Well, it's not full screen. The first reason being, I tried it on this little PowerBook, and it really didn't like it. It decided that it would take the whole CPU just to render one frame of that full screen, so I stopped doing it. The second reason is that your fixed size of resolution. So for this particular case, actually, you have to have an image size which is a power of 2. So this is 512 by 512, and the next step this computer can't deal with, 1024 by 1024. There's an obscure answer.
Thanks, Ben. You can keep playing there, but I need to get around and under here. And that's good. Okay, so that's pretty much what we have for you in terms of presentation, but identify these people and you can ask them questions. They all know lots. So if you have questions, I could take a few questions right now, but we're running out of time. So not too long questions. If you want deep information, you should probably ask people individually. So are there any kind of quick and friendly questions out there? Oh, before I say that, I just want to say thank you to the Canada Council who funded this project, and thank you to InterAccess who housed it and nurtured it and made a space for us to be in. What we're hoping is that people will see an opportunity to make money, and they will offer their services to make them. I'm not that interested myself, but if there's anybody in this room who wants to build these boards and sell them, you're free to do so. You don't need to pay us anything. Yeah, because we could get you some orders if you want to build them. So we're actually, one of the things we're doing is we're looking at places like kitsrus.com, and they do electronic kits, and we'd like to get them to do a kit, like a bag full of parts and a printed circuit board. That would be pretty easy to put together. We prefer if people build them, but if somebody wants to build them for people, we're happy to have that done. But I don't want to build them for people. Okay, once you build them, what do you want to make it work? Okay, well, that's all on the website. That's a complicated question to answer just standing here. But basically, there's some firmware, again, which you download, the mysterious firmware, and you download it into the chip from your serial port or your USB port, and that's what makes it an active living aid.
I'm gonna answer part of that question too. You're saying, I'm gonna interpret, like, how do you make it work a little differently. One of the things we're doing is making what are called worked solutions. So that, say you saw the cool OpenGL box and you want one just like that, you'll be able to download that recipe and get the exact instructions for being able to do that. If you want to build the audio switcher, you'll be able to build that. So is that more what you were asking? Yeah, that's right, yeah. And also, you know, use the site for communicating with other users, so that if you say, hey, you know, I want to, you know, get like a frog and make its legs twitch like that, and somebody could build like a aid to frog interface, and as long as nobody tells the Humane Society, it's all good. Okay, so yeah, people are as much resources as the work solutions that we're going to put on the site. Okay.
Yeah, I forgot to talk about the cooking metaphor. We're trying to think about electronics as cooking, and so everybody can, well, not everybody, but most people can cook, and they didn't study cooking. But if you want to be a really good cook, it helps to have more information. So we're starting to build recipes on the website that people can download, cook up some electronics, and have it work just like, you know, a stew would. So that's how we're trying to approach it. You don't have to know a lot about electronics to put the parts together following a recipe. And as you get more confident and more successful at putting recipes together, you start to experiment and branch out from there. And that's kind of the modus operandi of aid users. Yep. Are there going to be any workshops to help people get off the ground? Yes, there are. We're going to be setting up some workshops. We're going to get a little more sorted out before we do that, though, because there's some things that we want to iron out, a few little problems. But once we've got those done, we hope that sometime this summer we will be doing some workshops. The place to find out about that stuff is InterAccess. InterAccess has a newsletter called Axon. You can join InterAccess for how much now? How much is InterAccess? What's it not? Well, not just to get the newsletter. How much is that? Oh, you can get Axon Lite for free, apparently. So if you go to the interaccess.org website, you can find out about that. Or there's also a link from the AID website at aid.interaccess.org. And that's the best place to keep in touch. We'll probably advertise it through places like Instant Coffee as well, if anybody's on those lists. Okay, we should wrap up because there's other people with great things to show and do. So thank you all for coming to see Aid, and keep checking in on our website and come to the workshops and build Aid and tell us about your experiences, and we'd love to help out. Thank you.
Enjoy Lewis for now, and enjoy the art interface device. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.